For LGBT folks who spent a good part of their lives hiding their gender or sexual identity, it can seem like one of those wild unboxing videos from YouTube when they open up to show the world who they really are.
Today, musician Tom Goss, who for years has pioneered new film and music techniques in his music videos, joins us to take a look at his new work, Wake Alive, directed by filmmaker Scott G. Brooks. The video presents the idea that we literally put ourselves in little boxes and that we are often trapped by the limited perceptions others have of us.
Listen as Tom Goss talks about the mainstreaming of queer musicians on American Idol and RuPaul's Drag Race, singing on Facebook Live on Friday mornings with Devin Green,
and the worst gig of his life.
Plus, Scary Spice Mel B reveals she had a sexual tryst with fellow Spice Girl Jerry Hallwell, a.k.a. Ginger Spice.
Spicy!
The gay app for the big boys and those who love them, Growler, was sold for $11.8 million.
And Tinder introduces height verification on the app. Will other measurement verifications soon follow? I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Hey!
Hi, is this Tom Goss?
This is Tom Goss. Who's this?
Tom Goss. I thought we were talking to Steve Grant today.
Yeah, we
April
are.
April Fools.
Wow, wow.
Just kidding. Congratulations on the new song and the new music video, Wake Alive.
Thank you. It's a new video, but it's not actually a new song. The song has been released for a very long time, and I shot that video years ago and just could never figure out how to finish it. And then I finally did.
Wait a minute. So this is something from your vault.
Yeah, that's something from the vault. So I really, that's off my 2016 record, What Doesn't Break. I shot that video February of 2017, I bet.
Where are you right now?
Los Angeles.
No, I mean, it sounds like you're like
at a playground somewhere.
No, I'm just outside, sitting outside this cafe.
Oh, I can hear the birds chirping in the background.
Does it sound nice?
Sometimes it's good. Just be careful of the wind.
Yeah, and tell those kids to shut up.
Who am I telling to shut up?
The kids. I hear children playing in the background.
No, I don't see any kids.
Okay, maybe they just came by.
Shut up! Should we play a little bit of Wake Alive for the listeners?
Yeah, okay, I'd love that.
Here it goes.
I'm alive!
I'm sorry, that's the wrong track. That's Jackie Hoffman singing I'm Alive from Xanadu. Let's play a little Wake Alive by Tom Goss.
It's like the thing you never dared to wonder, and always just a touch out of your reach, until you realize that you're its maker, then it's all you see.
Too good to me.
Honey, you are really thinking outside the box. In this case, the hot box.
Absolutely.
So for people who want to catch the video, it's on our website, feastoffun.com, and of course on YouTube, Tom Goss Music. And this video is directed by your friend Scott G. Brooks from Baltimore, where you and your friends are trapped inside these cardboard boxes.
Yeah, your head's in a box.
Just like the blockheads in Gumby.
Just like the movie Seven.
Exactly. People's heads were in boxes in Seven? I remember that.
Oh, I don't want to give... Spoiler alert!
It was horrible. Yeah, somebody died really horribly. Yeah. Okay, I'm sure. Scott's a really great friend of mine, and I miss him a lot. We lived together in D.C., and he did Make Believe. Me and him collaborated on the Make Believe record. He was the painter in Make Believe. And so we were just, he was coming out to L.A. for a show, and we started talking about potential ideas for a new music video, and I really was playing a lot with projection at the time, and so we really wanted to do something with projection, and this is kind of what we came up with. It was super, super fun.
Yeah, this approach to sort of putting someone's face over a cardboard box is very puppetry.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me of the 70s and 80s puppet superstars Mumenschanz that you guys might remember from The Muppet Show. They would usually perform, I think they were French. They would perform with all these masks made out of clay or post-it notes, and they would remove the notes and the expressions would change.
Oh, that's so clever.
Oh, yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, the reason I bring up Mumenschanz is because your video certainly reminds me a lot of their great work, and it takes it to a new level.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. You know what I really wanted to do was projection mapping, which is really complicated but super interesting. You want to hear a funny story? I just remembered this right now. So what I wanted to do was projection mapping on the body itself, but it's for 3D project, so you can make it look like something was crawling up the body. And so that's what Scott and I were really talking about. But it's super complicated, right? And so I went to get, and then I found this company that would take pictures of you so you could have a 3D rendering so you could do the projection mapping.
Okay.
And so I called them and I emailed them. I was like, how much is it? Oh, it's and it was super reasonable price. It came out to he kept saying oh, it's $15 for this and $7 for this. I was cool. And I talked to him 15 times about it. And then I got there and we did the whole process of the picture taking, which was really ornate. And I was man, this is really, they're doing a lot of work. And then he sent me a bill. So he was $15 and $7 was I don't know, $22. And then he sent me a bill for $2,200.
Wow.
So
he meant $1,500.
$1,500.
You were thinking $15?
He never said hundreds at the end of his thing. Yeah. And I thought it was cheap, but they had stuff on their site, like map stuff that was $30 or $20. So I was but it was, he got really mad at me. And I was dude, just stop your work on it. I'm not paying. Just don't do anymore, you know? Mm. But it was he never said 100 ever, but maybe
he didn't send you
too.
An estimate in paper.
Nope.
Or an email.
We literally just talked on the phone. It was it's 15 for this, it's 6 for this, it's whatever it was. I don't remember the exact numbers.
And in your mind, you were thinking hundreds, not thousands.
I was thinking neither hundreds or thousands.
Oh, you're thinking $15.
Yeah.
Not $15,000.
Yeah, not $1,500 or $15,000 or $15 million.
That drives me crazy when real estate agents do that. They're well, this house is $150. And I was oh wow, that's really cheap, $150?
Yeah.
And they're no, honey, $150 million. You're well, how am I supposed to know what, scale of zeros are you talking about here?
Yeah, that seems important information.
Yeah.
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 He was trying to dupe you.
Was there a reason that you decided to release Wake Alive in the spring right now? Or is it was a project that was sort of being developed and it just came to fruition?
No, I shot that years ago and we had this whole concept of what it would do and how it would look and how it would evolve. We had a camera go down when we were shooting.
Yeah.
So we lost some footage and felt like the story wasn't, the arc wasn't what we had intended to shoot. So we started editing, and I don't need to go into the whole laborious process of it, but it just was never quite looking right. And so we kept going back to it and kept going back to it and kept cutting it differently and kept coming at it with different ideas. And then finally it ended up where it is now, which I'm really happy it got to this place, because I think it looks really fun and dynamic and vibrant, and it's really different than anything that I've ever done. It seemed a really big, funny, fun, vibrant, fast-paced song, and I thought springtime was a wonderful time.
What I really like about your music videos is that they follow this 80s style of people are struggling in the video, and then the music lets them cut loose, and at the end, they're all happy and free.
Get out of that box.
It must have been terrible afterwards to have to clean up all that confetti.
I don't remember it actually being that hard.
You're like, Scott, do you mind doing this? I got to go to another video shoot.
No, it's funny. When we shot, when we shot Round in All the Right Places, one of our guys wore a scarf that had glitter on it.
Yeah.
And I fucking tell you what, I had to clean that studio for over an hour, just going over and over and over for the glitter, over vacuuming, sweeping, vacuuming, sweeping.
I work events sometimes, and like some of the places I work at, they have like things in the contract. It's like, no confetti. If you use confetti, it's a $250 mm-hmm. charge.
Which was the same for this guy. He's like, this was the only rule, like no glitter. And I didn't even think it was glitter. And I'm not even kidding. It was like a scarf. It was so small. Mm-hmm. How every single piece of glitter got all over the studio, I have no idea, but it sucked.
You know, it's funny that we sort of take glitter at events and shows and performances as ubiquitous.
Yeah.
Right? We started watching this documentary on Studio 54 on Netflix. And basically, it's a documentary on the first corrupt gay bar in New York City. And I guess just the guys were really, like, sleazy or doing all sorts of fucked up shit. And, you know, they were, like, messing with their money and, you know, created a very popular, very opulent bar that celebrities, straight people, gay people all felt comfortable in. And yeah. One of the things that they sort of, according to the documentary, pioneered was throwing confetti over to dancers on the dance floor. And I guess for people, that was such a novelty at the time.
Huh.
But all the cleaning crew the next day, they're like, it's a living, clean up this confetti all over the place.
I used to clean up a baseball stadium. When I was a kid, like I was like 13, and we had a minor league team in Kenosha. And so I would go like after every game the next morning. And you know how people just eat the peanuts or the sunflower seeds and spit them out?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was literally me like sweeping and cleaning everybody's like spit peanuts and sunflower seeds and candy wrappers and popcorn. It was like I would just clean the entire stands by myself.
It's interesting you're dedicating your life to creating music videos and songs, urging people to break out of their box, to live free, to be their authentic selves. Considering, you know, for you, like, that's also been something you've been trying to grow as a person throughout your life. As a Catholic priest who, you know, was a wrestler and then you became a musician. Do you feel like in some ways that your song is also speaking to yourself in the past?
I think it's speaking to myself in the present. No. I don't think that I have accomplished anything in terms of growth. You know what I mean? Like, I know that I've grown, but that doesn't mean that I have, like, it's not like you reach a pinnacle and you sit there, you know? And so I really love the words and the message in the song Wake Alive. And I probably wrote it because I honestly wrote that for weight. So I probably wrote that song in 2013. I was just writing like crazy for weight, and a bunch of the tracks on What Doesn't Break, my 2016 release, were throwaways from that record because they didn't fit the vibe of that record. And so I feel like at the time, listening to it and thinking about it, I was doing the artist's way. I'm not sure if you've ever done the artist's way, but it's like super cool. Yeah. So I was like every day doing the artist way and was really into it. And really a lot of that messaging is similar messaging to that I'm certainly saying to myself. But when I listen to it, I also come to a realization and understanding that I haven't achieved a lot of those things, right? Like I'm still trying to tell myself the same messages that I was trying to tell myself in that song. So yeah. I mean, I definitely am speaking to myself a lot of times in the song, but I feel like we all need these kind of messages in our life. Like we are good, we are valuable, we are not our shadows. You know, we are greater than that.
Well, this is the thing that is really exciting about living in this age of YouTube and sort of auteur, do-it-yourself music videos. I think of like Fifi O'Hara, Jeremy Carey. I think of Steve Grand, Matt Albert, you, Levi Kreiss, a lot of these gay male artists and other LGBTQ artists are making a lot of really interesting music videos and putting them on social media and sort of really laying themselves out bare. And a common thread that I see through all these videos is this idea of making sense with who they are as their authentic selves.
Yeah.
There's this idea that the person you are right now is not the real you, or that somehow Steve Grant in his latest video, he's coming into conflict with his mirror self.
Yeah.
And And so it made me think about like Alice in Wonderland and, you know, the book Through the Looking Glass, and even like Star Trek, where this idea that pops up in literature and also in film that the when we interact with somebody in a mirror universe or in the mirror, a character that pops out of the mirror, they're usually like an evil version of ourselves. You know, Lewis Carroll was trying to say with the book Through the Looking Glass is that the mirror universe of ourselves is really is a story, is an allegory for science, that our senses betray us, and that only through objectivity and through analysis is the way we can understand ourselves and the world, that our senses are always lying to us. And so what you see is not always what you get. And so for as LGBTQ people, this is a lot to process here. For as LGBTQ people, we're always wrestling with who we are as authentic selves, because we feel so much internalized shame and bigotry and discrimination. And we're trying to always make sense of that. And sometimes we're angry at ourselves for making poor decisions in the past. And also, we need to understand that those poor decisions that we made in the past are still part of our authentic selves.
Yeah. But
we need to forgive ourselves for making poor decisions and move forward in our lives as artists or as queer people.
I would agree with that and also disagree with that. I'm not even sure that all the decisions are poor. Right? They're poor because hindsight's 20/20. And so we can't really put ourselves back in the shoes into the position that we were. Like, the fact that we are where we are and we're like alive and healthy in the moment means that we made the right decision in the past. I do think that I would disagree with the assumption of the Lewis Carroll that our senses betray us. And I would say the opposite. I would say those things that aren't actual, that are only perceived and then get twisted in our psyche, those are the things that betray us. And I think if you look at LGBT artists that are creating new content, I think the thing that's wonderful about it is they are creating a new narrative and a new normal. I think the reason that our psyches betray us is because we live in a society that imposes social mores and social norms upon us. And us being gay or in and of itself betray all of those social norms and mores. So it's impossible for us to understand ourselves in a construct that is normal and good unless you strip yourself of everything that you have been taught throughout your entire life.
Tom, are you saying that Lewis Carroll's full of shit?
No. I'm saying that
Alice in Wonderland was derivative at best.
He was on heroin, was he not? Wasn't he smoking opium?
I think he may have been, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know.
But that's, I guess, an entertaining story. That's the idea that he's trying to convey in the idea is that your mirror universe self is not necessarily like a villain. It's the doppelganger, your evil twin. Mm-hmm. It's actually just a better it's a different understanding of who you really are.
Would you say it's a reflection of who you are, like a mirror?
Well, that's why they use it as a mirror, right? But it's the idea. You have to think about mirrors at the time of Lewis Carroll. Mirrors were shitty. Mirrors were like imperfect. They were flawed. They were full of imperfections. Mm. And so when people looked into the mirrors at the time, those mirrors were distorted their images. And so
they
got
still
people
distort
thinking,
them today. Yeah. You do not look exactly like you do in a mirror.
Well, except for me. But that's the kind of thing is like, you know, and every time you sort of making this video, And it's a very difficult place to be because it's so much easier to talk about. Like for us, I think in some ways what we do is a little bit easier because we're usually like talking about somebody else's art, or we're sort of analyzing ideas or news items. Whereas in your case, you're sort of in a situation where you're sort of have to make it up out of thin air and tell and put yourself in a very vulnerable place and tell your story through metaphor or directly.
No, I don't disagree with that. I do think that people don't understand really a lot of times what artists do. And I think people are very quick to comment on it and to consume it and then to comment on it in a way in which that is their opinion is as valuable as the art that's created without really understanding what goes into that.
But how do you avoid like getting into an area of cliche? Like, you know, because we always hear people like, think about outside the box. You got to think outside the box. And I'm like, saying you're thinking outside of the box is the most inside the box thing you can say.
You know, I don't know. I never want to do anything really that I've done before. Like, everything has a different angle to it, a different twist to it. I mean, even if I go to lunch somewhere, I really have a hard time going to the same place twice. You know, I think it's just like innate in my body that I always want to be pushing my senses and pushing my experiences and just seeing how I can see things differently. And I think the truth of the matter is I see the world differently. I grew up, you know, I mean, this happens to this day, but I get into conversations with people, and I remember this happening a lot growing up, and maybe this is that idea of social norms when I was fully immersed in this heteronormative society as somebody not claiming to be gay. And and I was, you know, we'd have conversations and everybody shares a perspective and it's a dialogue. And I would say, well, I don't really feel that way. I feel this way. And I remember like over and over, and people would go, well, your opinion doesn't really count because you're so different. You're so weird. You know what I mean? Like, just the way that I perceive the world and the way that I act in the world, I think is different than most people. So I think that works in my favor.
Well, it's certainly like a privilege to be able to make art and to be able to put so much time and energy into these videos, you know? And so in some ways, as an artist, it does place you in sort of a different position than most people have.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, in terms of like your music videos, you're certainly doing a lot of things that are sort of very ambitious. Like there was one, what was it, Make Believe, where you're just like lying naked and all this animation was like flowing across you, which must have taken hours and years and days to make.
Yeah, it was. Honestly, that was one of the easiest videos.
Because you're just laying there
naked.
Yeah, I mean, it took, you know, the clock's there because it gauges how long that shot is. It's an 80-minute shot. But once we dropped it into the editing and you fast forward it, it's done. You know, there's like what probably took 3 hours of editing to make that video, you know, whereas the other videos are like 40, 50, 60, 100 hours of editing. You know, there was a lot more pre-planning to make sure that everything was going to hit perfectly. But once we got a good take of it, then we were good to go.
And currently you're right now singing live on Facebook with Devin Green and her gentleman friend. I'm not sure.
Ned Douglas.
Ned Douglas. So yeah. How's that project going along? Because it seems like a lot of fun just to get together with a friend and
so much
play
fun
music.
Yeah. And so Devin lives just like right down the road, you know, so it literally takes me like 5 minutes to get to her house, which in LA is gold in and of itself. But yeah, we started writing. We shot a music video together. We wrote the song called Three of a Kind that'll be coming out, I don't know, in a month or so. Super fun, super cute. I can't wait for everybody to see it. But yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun just to do something that's kind of light and that doesn't have a lot of pressure. Even recording the song and making the music video wasn't full of pressure. And most of the things that I do are, like you said, they're super ambitious. The videos and the songs that I make, I do it in a very tight budget, and I do things very ambitiously. You know, you see my videos, and they look like they cost $100,000, and they definitely don't.
Well, I usually am able to catch, because you guys aren't on a regular schedule with Ned and Devin, but...
It's like 10 o'clock on Fridays.
Oh, is it always 10 o'clock on Fridays? Okay, that's probably... I'm usually up by then. So I can
just barely
catch part of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 10 a.m., you mean?
Well, but that's
LA
noon
time,
your time.
So it's noon my time.
Central time is noon.
Yes, I'm often eating lunch, and I was like, oh...
When I was growing up, they used to always have the shows. It'd be like 9-8 Central, you know? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And I never really knew what that meant, like, as a little kid. And I was like, what? And for me, you know, I just assumed it was like math. And I'd be like, oh, it's just like the the average of the two. So it must mean that it's at 8:30.
I love the way you think, Tom.
Yeah.
Everybody's really excited about Jeremiah Lloyd Harmon, the gay church janitor from Maryland.
Baltimore?
Is he Baltimore? He's also okay, Baltimore, yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting the fact that we're sort of starting to see finally like openly gay singers and performers and people in these mainstream TV and film projects. And
it sort
of changes the dynamic for people like you who's sort of been throughout your whole life very much as a countercultural figure or as a sort of a indie musician. And, what do you make of all this like mainstreaming of like queer music and culture?
Do you want me to tell you the answer I'm supposed to give you, or do you want my honest answer?
I want you to like.
Well, it is April Fool's, so you tell us whatever you want.
Well, so this is how I feel. I am really super happy about it, and I'm happy. There's so many queer artists coming out right now, and they are doing really interesting work, and their voices that have been squashed throughout eternity that are seeing the light of day in a way in which we can't even fully fathom, like in a way in which the culture is so hungry for that their voices are being heard with more weight than regular hetero artists. And so I am super duper grateful for that and really proud of that. And I'm proud of my contribution to making that a possibility, because I do think that I've been doing this for a dozen years and there's a bunch of artists out there, you named a bunch of them about 10 minutes ago that have been doing the same thing as me. And I don't think that this is possible without that groundwork being laid.
But it's interesting because a lot of young people don't understand this history and don't even have an appetite for it, or even older people too. Like they're just like television and film is such a powerful medium that it obliterates anything that we've been doing and even obliterates history itself.
Absolutely. And
I personally can't feel a little bit jealousy or frustration.
So there's my flip side that I was going to say. The honesty of it is like, and not even, and so, so if I'm being honest, yeah, sometimes I am frustrated only because, I'm grateful that it exists for other people, but it didn't exist for me, and I'm old now. So it's like there's a certain amount of sadness and longing that I sometimes feel that these opportunities weren't there for me. Like when I was calling and when I was knocking on doors, people were like, we don't let faggots play here, you know? And I definitely did get that, And so I do have a little bit of envy for that, but at the end of the day, I wouldn't take it away. I still want it to be there for the next generation.
But if you you had the same opportunities that Jeremiah on American Idol has right now, it would also isolate you from people like us.
Absolutely. I don't regret my career.
I feel a little bit sorry for these sort of like young queer kids who are getting thrust into the spotlight so quickly that they, the one thing that they're missing out is on the LGBTQ community and those close friendships that you develop when your artistic career doesn't explode overnight.
No, that's true. And I do think it also gives, it does, I think it also gives me perspective. Like I have played everywhere and I've played horrible, horrible shows and I've played great shows and I've met horrible people and I've met great people. And I am grateful for all of those interactions. And I also know like who my real friends are and what art really is. I think it'll be harder for him to fully actualize as an artist, maybe. I mean, he seems like he's doing really amazingly, especially as a young person, and his songwriting is really great, and his voices and his playing is really great. But I think one of the things that I've been grateful for in some ways, it's not being able to have that mainstream success, has made me really dig into myself as an artist more and more and more, so that I can be a truly authentic artist instead of having to placate to what what's going to make the most money.
So are you saying that like Beyonce is not an authentic person?
Well, I'm saying that Beyonce is at a different level, right? Mm. I'm saying that if you get swooped up by American Idol when you're an unknown, you know, you don't have a lot of control over what you're doing. If you're a YouTuber, you honestly don't have a lot of control over what you're doing because you're just always trying to appease everybody, right? And so I've gone through a lot of phases in my life where I tried different things in an attempt to appease people, in an attempt to play with algorithms, in an attempt to make the money in the way that I was supposed to make the money. And that was really unfulfilling to me. Had that been successful, I might be trapped doing that.
Tom, you mentioned you've had some shitty gigs over the course of your career. What's the shittiest gig you ever had?
I had some fairly traumatic gigs this past fall. Like, I don't usually have bad gigs anymore, but I had two horrible gigs in a row. One was at a Pride Festival where the sound guys were just fucking it up. I literally yelled at the sound guys from behind a microphone in the middle of the set. That was pretty horrible.
What did you say to them?
Well, so there was all this integrated video. So it was this big video screen, and it was integrating my videos with my songs. And then they just were, like, fucking it up. Like, literally just had to press play, like a button play. And I just said, I essentially just fired them. I was like, no, stop it. I did have a gig once in D.C. 10 years ago where the sound guy got fired in between acts. He was so drunk. And so in the middle of one of the acts, the owner called a different sound guy, came to the set, fired the sound guy. Then we re-sound checked for like 20 minutes and then finished the show. But I had a horribly traumatic one in Fort Lauderdale this fall, where, you know, I was playing Sunshine Cathedral, which is big, which is beautiful, and the sound's impeccable.
What is that?
It's a church. It's a church. It's called Sunshine Cathedral, but it's really wonderful, and they've invested a lot in their facility to make it wonderful for concerts like this. And I've played there for a long time, and it's always really great. It's always one of the highlights, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful show. And you know how you have those shows where just the audience is just like totally in your hands, and it's just like the energy is palpable. And then an hour and change into the show, with like three songs left, I had an old college buddy of mine show up completely shit-faced with his dog. Like, this is a kind of place where you could hear a pin drop at the back of the room, right? And now all of a sudden this guy shows up with his dog, screaming and like heckling the whole time. And I had to tell him to shut the fuck up like 15 times from set. And then finally the show's over. And then it just turned into this crazy, like, he was definitely like having a nervous breakdown at my show. And then there's some history, because like he became like this big Trump supporter and like attacking people online when Trump was like getting elected and getting into fights with my husband and stuff. Yeah. So it was almost like, so it was like, for me, I hadn't talked to him in a couple of years, but he was one of my best friends. And so I went there, you know, and I called him and I texted him a couple of times, like trying to mend fences. And then he didn't show up to the gig. And I was like, okay, he doesn't have time or he doesn't want to. And then he shows up in this. So there's like all this added energy to it too. And then he was probably there for an hour and a half after the gig, like screaming and telling, like threatening to fight people and telling them like they were like, you know, they're just a faggot and they're going to get what they deserve. And like then he just broke down crying, and it was just like this horrendous thing. Horrendous. Horrendous.
How did it all pan out? Did he come out of the closet? Did he?
No, he's not gay. No, it just panned out. I mean, it was just over. Like, I mean, I essentially like physically had to get rid of him. And I mean, it sucks that it was at this place that's so nice and it's so posh and it's so friendly, because if it was at a club, the bouncer would have just bounced him, you know what I mean? Yeah,
that's like straight out of a soap opera or something.
It was straight out of a fucking soap opera. And then it was just like, you know, and he's like screaming at me, then crying, and then this and then this, and then like, then I was like, get the fuck out of here, like, you gotta go, you know.
This is why you should do drag, because he could have snatched the wig off your head and turned it into like a
viral moment.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. It was in a way a viral moment, because literally like I get an email from my mom the next day. Oh, my friend was at the show. da 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 da. And I'm like, so in the Podunk, Wisconsin, my mom's hearing about this thing that happened in Fort Lauderdale the night before, you know? And that's what everybody's talking. That's what everybody left the show talking about. So we took this wonderful, beautiful highlight. It would have been a highlight of my career performance. It was that good, and it was that powerful, and it was the energy was that palpable, and it turned it into this just like horrible, horrible, horrible thing. And it was like,
I think it, you know, that reminds me of Marcel Duchamp's painting on glass.
I don't know it. What is
it? It's called "The Bride Stripped Bare by Her Bachelor's Even." It's also called "The Large Glass." And when it was being exhibited, it fell and broke into thousands of pieces. And Marcel Duchamp, in his brilliance and wisdom, said, "Ah, now the painting is finished." It's a double entendre, right? Sure. And sometimes when these flaws, these imperfections, these train wrecks that happen to our near and dear works of art can actually be a really transcendent moment and finish it in both senses of the word. No one is going to forget your performance ever.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's true. And I think from a personal perspective, what you're saying is true, because it was almost like this person who was one of my best friends, you know, I'd spent so much time thinking about and so much sadness about, you know, because it kind of, I think maybe you guys had a similar experience, but I know I talked to a lot of people and they did when our kind of world was turned on its head and you realize the extent of who was on the Trump train and who felt like this about gay people or Mexican people or Muslim people, you realize like, oh, this is so much more pervasive than I could have possibly imagined. And it's not only pervasive, it's pervasive in a way that's loud and ugly.
Mm-hmm. And they kind of feel like they finally get the chance because they were quiet for 8 years and doing us all a favor by not criticizing Obama that much. And you're just kind of like, what are you going to criticize him for? You know, what really? So.
Yeah, well, so.
Yeah, with this Mueller report, though, look at that. That's the ambulance. That's a siren of truth, honey.
Mm-hmm. That was a siren of truth.
And, you know, with this Mueller report, everybody seems to be focusing on the fact that it sort of exonerates Trump. But, you know, Trump on record has admitted to all kinds of crimes. So if the Mueller report doesn't implicate Trump in major conspiracies and fraud, I think it's the Mueller report's fault that it, because, you know, here's a person actually admitting to a crime, leaving a trace of all his crimes, and there's still, like, you have this Republican who's actually, you know, Mueller is actually friends with Barr, the guy who's putting together this 4-page
summary,
you know, so who's trying to cover up the investigation. So yeah. I have very little faith in that, but, you know, of where it's going to go. But it is like, it's really up to us to put pressure in the voting booth and on the streets to get rid of this tyrant that we have in our hands.
Yeah, I agree. And it's really interesting place in which we live. And I think for me, just talking from like an emotional perspective, it was really sad for me that our friendship was hurt by it until that moment. And I think the transformative thing for me was like, oh, I just don't really need this in my life at all. Mm. Whether that's my neighbor or my brothers, or my best friend, you know what I mean? It doesn't really, like, those titles don't really exist if it's damaging and it's hurtful.
You know who I would love to see you do a collaboration with besides Jeremiah, the gay church janitor?
Yeah, who?
It's Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Judge.
Ooh.
How do you pronounce his name? Buttigieg?
Yeah, Buttigieg.
Buttigieg.
Who's that?
He's running for president. The United States, the first gay mayor, front-running candidate for president in the United States. He's the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. He's like your cousin, honey. He's wholesome, brilliant, progressive, wise, and able to bridge the divide.
He's definitely a gay to watch out for in the future. Your favorite gay dating app for the big boys, Growler, was sold earlier this month for $11.8 million.
Oh, my God. We should have been doing an app all this time and not a podcast.
No fuck kidding. Yeah, dude. They made so much money on that. And you know what I loved about that app? You know, and those guys are friends of mine, so I'm really happy for them. But they're, you know, you could do like the shouts all the time. Mm-hmm. And then, like living in a big city, you get like 3 or 4 or 5 shouts a day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And those shouts cost like $5 to $20. So say like $50. We'll just average it. And then you think like how many major cities are there? And you're like at least 20. Mm-hmm. So even in just like that, you just start adding it up. And it's like, and
explain to the people what a shout is for the, cause a lot of people, you know,
send a message mm-hmm. out to a radius. Mm-hmm. So a 5 mile radius. So everybody, if you're like hungry bottom in room 308 at the Hilton. And, you can send that message to everybody within a 5 mile, 10 mile or 20 mile wow, radius.
That's a lot of cum dumping.
It is. And everywhere you go. And so I would use it for tour. I would like okay. show up in a town, send a shout out to everybody in the area about my show, and then start conversations with people and build relationships.
Did you get any horny people coming to your shows expecting sex instead of music?
There was this really funny time. This was so long ago now in Eugene, Oregon, where I was sound checking. This guy was there really early, just sitting right in front. And he was like,
oh, daddy needs a belly rub.
And he just kept saying, daddy doesn't need a belly rub.
You get that a lot, don't you?
I do. And no, it's funny because he was like, did you get my MySpace message? And this was how long ago it was. And I was like, no, I didn't. But like, I immediately went to the car, plugged in the old, remember that Wi-Fi generator? Like that little Wi-Fi USB thing from like Sprint. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But I immediately looked at the message and was like, this is fucking hilarious. This guy's hilarious.
What did it say?
I don't remember. I'm sure something crude. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. You know, what all of those messages
But you, say. You felt it was a good marketing tool, though, for yourself.
Growler? Yeah, I liked it. And I can also send world. You can send that worldwide, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can just hit essentially, you know, I think it's like 5 or 7 million pockets like that. You know, you're literally sending a message to all those millions of pockets at the same time. So, I mean, I don't know what is going
You're
to
giving
become.
Them a great ad right now on the show. Growler endorsed by Tom Goss.
I endorse Growler for sure. I met so many, and honestly, I've met so many wonderful people through Growler that have become really good friends of mine. So
it's the place to go for the big boys.
Or people who like the big boys.
You remember the Spice Girls, right?
Are you a fan?
The Spice Girls?
Yeah. If you want to be my lover, you got to get with my friends. Well, yeah, literally, sure. They actually did get with their friends and they meant it. Melanie Brown, best known as Mel B or Scary Spice. Scary Spice Mel B spilt some hot, hot girl on girl spicy tea. Mel B said she had sex with Ginger Spice, Jerry Halliwell, back in the day.
When they were in the Spice Girls?
When in the Spice Girls, they were getting with their friends, literally. And she says, well, we were best friends. It just happened. Gotta say, though, Ginger Spice has great boobs.
And I think that's wonderful. And I think that happens a lot more times than we say.
Are you saying like groups like New Kids on the Block, One Direction, they all had a little bit of gay trysts?
I mean, I'm not saying that, but I think that probably is happening and has happened.
Well, didn't the Beatles all jerk off together?
They did.
You know? Wait, really? Why do you say that?
Paul McCartney said it in an interview not too long ago.
What did he say?
He said we would jerk off and then like, you know.
We would turn on the porn and like.
No, I don't know. They would jerk off and then somebody would be like, oh, Bridget Bardot. Oh, Marilyn Monroe. And they talk about like the hot women they were attracted to.
And he'd be like, Winston Churchill. That was John Lennon. Always an anarchist.
Yeah, I don't know. That's cool. Mm-hmm. I think like the
Well,
Beatles
you've toured
are so
with
different.
A lot of very attractive, very desirable musicians.
Yeah, I've never had that experience on tour. I am trying to think, but no, sorry. No.
Have you experienced any other musicians getting on with other musicians?
Still some tea, girl. Still some tea.
It's interesting you guys are like sort of for being, you know, gay. This is the idea, like, you know, you're gay musicians, you're queer musicians, and you're expected to be a little bit more, you know, free loving. But in reality, it's usually the opposite, isn't it?
Well, I can only speak for myself.
I seldom see any of the musical acts that we see touring, like, you know, being.
They're not going to make you privy to a boom. Listen.
But usually, like, you
know, I know stories. They've told me stories. Okay. But it's not stuff I want to repeat, you know. But it does involve dungeons and chains and whips and stuff like that. Yeah.
But I'm saying, obviously, they have a sex life. I'm just saying, like, in terms of the touring,
yes,
like, hooking up with other musicians, you know, in that space, mm-hmm, it's sort of like having sex with a coworker, you know? It's like, if things go wrong, things can go really, really wrong.
I feel like I'm hearing this as, like, a way in which I can grow, and next time I talk to you, maybe I'll have better answers for you.
No, I'm just trying to talk about this phenomenon, right? So, yeah, like, when you work with somebody really close, mm-hmm, it does build a very close bond, and so sometimes romantic feelings do develop. But the danger of that is it's sort of like farting in an elevator. If something goes wrong, it can go really horribly wrong, whether that is, you know, in your office or is it your musicians on a tour together. You're still working. You depend on the cooperation, the goodwill. And if you have sex with somebody on the tour and then, you know, hearts get broken, it can tear the band apart.
Well, and I also feel like, not to be weird, but like sex is not that important. Right. So it's like, even if I wanted to do that, even if I had thoughts of doing that, for me, the project, the song, the video, is far more important. Right.
Yeah.
I am creating this thing. I'm telling the story. I am making this beautiful piece of art to put out into the world to exist for all of eternity, as far as we know, right? How many lives am I going to impact by this song? There's a really great responsibility that I feel when I'm creating. And having an orgasm, as wonderful as that is much less important to me than that all of that stuff that I just said.
Mm. Now, the dating app Tinder is doing a new feature, I guess, which is they're wanting to verify the height.
Well, you get a height verification badge, an HVB. And so it's something they've had for a while, I guess, and they're, like, they're finally rolling it out because a lot of guys lie about their height on the dating apps.
Especially heterosexual guys.
Are they going to have a penis size verification app? Is this where
it could happen, right? But see, I don't know how that would work. Because like with the Tinder one, you have to go outside and stand next to some kind of commercial building, and then they'll use state of the art verifying, and you'll get a badge for your profile. So I don't, you know, they're going to be able to measure you against a door or something.
Well, most modern smartphones now have two lenses on the back of the phone, and so if you they'll have a measuring app where you can measure a person's height,
mm-hmm,
or the length of your penis, mm-hmm, or the, yeah, you know, length of a box.
I've actually gotten a picture on one of the apps of somebody's penis, and it had a height, like it had a length verification kind of thing on it. It sure did. I probably saved it. I can send it to you.
Please.
And it was 8 inches, and he didn't respond to me after that. So I never got to verify it in person, but I guess a lot of straight guys, you know, on Tinder, they lie about their height because only like 14.5% of U.S. males are over 6 feet tall. And so a lot of guys say that like they're 5'10", you know, but really they're 5'6".
You know, so I started lying about my height for a totally opposite reason. You want to know why?
Why?
Because nobody believes how short I am.
Mm-hmm. How tall are you exactly?
I'm probably like 5'5".
Okay, so you're not that short. You're not like a little person.
But if I say anything less than 5'6",
mm-hmm,
I get into arguments.
Oh.
People don't believe it.
Yeah.
People are like, no, it's not true. And So I just say 5'6".
Mm-hmm. It's easier.
I found that the 5'6", nobody argues with me. Mm-hmm. They still sometimes think it's too short, mm-hmm. but they're also like, it's not egregious enough for them to argue about mm-hmm. it.
Right. I'm the same way with my age on these apps too. You know, people lie, I lie about my age on these apps just because otherwise it all becomes about my age. And it's like, if you like what you see in the photos, you're going to like me. You know, I say that I'm 40 plus, you know, like 41 or 42 or something like that. Yeah, I take a decade off because if I actually put my real age, which is 52, then it's all about, oh, my God, I can't believe you're 52. You're 52. Oh, wow. And then it's just like, oh.
Well, when you're and this is part of the reason, like a lot of people, you know, and I certainly like the party, in my opinion, is a little bit over when it comes to like hookup apps or dating apps. Mm. It's just that. You're just dealing with so many people's mental health issues that you're just kind of becoming almost like a free therapist for the general public, and you're not getting anything in return.
You're totally describing my life.
Mm. And I'm like, you know, there are actually apps out there that will actually, you know, you can talk to a therapist about like all your anxiety and issues, or, you know, you can hire a personal trainer to give you advice on fitness. You can, you know, there's a lot of sources, but it feels like, you know, these dating and hookup apps are fulfilling much more than a function than allowing people to come together. It's also creating a mental space for people who are very isolated and lonely.
Yeah. And I think that's true. And I think for me, that also exists on social media. You know, mm-hmm. I think I'm very accessible, and I think I create work that's really powerful to people that are struggling. And so I seem like a very easy person to take from emotionally, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Sure.
Because I feel like I have so much to give, and I do, but I do find that I become very depleted.
Well, that's what we started our Patreon, patreon.com/feastoffun. And so if you want some life coaching, art coaching, or just a sympathetic friend to listen to talk to, you can join that tier. And several times a month, we would Skype with you one-on-one and talk about your career, your projects, your life as an artist. It's completely confidential, and you know, Mark and I both have graduate degrees in our fields. I have a master's in art, and Mark has a master's in business. And so, in terms of like our qualifications and our experiences, as you guys as listeners of the show, it might be something that might be really useful to you in terms of like addressing, you know, your creative blocks, in terms of addressing your isolation, in terms of developing and growing an audience. You know, coming into a feast of fun and having an experience with us through Patreon might actually be even if it's just for a week or a month or a very short amount of time, it might actually be something that's really useful to you in growing and going to that next step in your career.
That's awesome.
And that's what I sort of urge people who sort of, and I would urge you to do this too. It's like create a space where you do get your needs met and are able to help other people with their needs as well. And because sometimes when we're sort of out there and you're putting ourselves there as media personalities, it can be very draining, especially if we're doing it on the internet where there's no financial compensation for it.
For sure.
It is interesting, like the dynamics of Patreon versus Kickstarter versus like PayPal donations versus merchandising versus online ad sales are dramatically different. And just because, you know, you see somebody who has millions of views on YouTube or millions of subscribers on for their podcast doesn't necessarily mean that there's people are going to be financially successful or even around in the future. And if you really love their work, you owe it to yourself to ensure that that is going to be around. And that's why I tell people, like, if you're excited about, you know, Kamala Harris or Pete Buttigieg or Feast of Fun or Tom Goss or whoever it is, even if you just give them $1, it can make a huge difference in their lives and be around for years to come and actually be able to do what they're going to do. That's why I gave $1 to Pete Buttigieg. you know?
Yeah.
And it's not much what I can do because I don't have a lot of money, but it's like, it's part of it is just me sending out the message. Mm-hmm. I believe in you. I give a dollar to Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. I give a dollar to Hillary Clinton. You know, it's the idea of like participating in your democracy and participating in your cultural life is something that will help you be a better person and help you think outside of the box.
Well, you know, you want to build the world you want to live in too. And so when you give that dollar, you're helping to create that world. And I want to live in a world where Pete Buttigieg or Feast of Fun is there.
Tom Goss
is there. And, you know, I really, the more I read about Pete, the more I love him. And I don't know if he'll be president someday, but I love his platform. And I love that a queer person is out there and is sane, reasonable, intelligent, charming, handsome. When you look at him and you look at Donald Trump, it's just like, oh my God, please make this change.
Well, it's a monster versus a knight in shining armor, yeah. A hero, you know, mm-hmm. And it is such a contrast and difference. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wouldn't mind Pete Buttigieg riding on a horse to Washington and slaying that dragon.
And even if I'm a Bernie supporter, even if I'm a Kamala Harris supporter, it's just, you know, you can support those and you can also support Pete. You know, as queer people, we need to.
Well, this is the thing, like, and politically, I don't grasp why people feel like they have to have one candidate they're rooting for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And right now here in Chicago, we have two really qualified and amazing women running for mayor. And either Lori Lightfoot or Tony Preckwinkle are going to win. They're the two front runners.
There's definitely going to be a woman. Mayor.
Yes, it's definitely going to be a woman.
That'd be awesome.
It's
Chicago,
a done deal. Sure. Unless you know, Republicans, somehow... involved.
They won't be able to do anything at this point in time.
But it's exciting.
At this point, though, there's a lot of, some people have problems with both these candidates. One, the Preckwinkle has been an insider for a long, long time. And Lightfoot has never been an elected official. And also people have some concerns with her being like part of the police oversight committee here. And as you know, there's a lot of issues with the Chicago police and police brutality. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all turns out. I voted already. I hope everybody else has.
I voted. Have you? Mm-hmm.
So, Tom, what's new on the horizon for you? What's going on? Are you coming back to Chicago to see us soon?
I need to. I am creating so much content right now. My new record, I went to get it mastered last week, so that is finished.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. It's beautiful. I'm producing 7 music videos at the same time right now.
Wow.
So what?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's bonkers. So essentially, probably late summer, you're just going to start being bombarded with the best stuff I've ever made. And it's really fucking great, and it's really powerful, and it's really fun, and it's all sorts of different things happening.
And what state
all sorts of different collaborations.
And what state of undress will you be in? How much skin will we see?
Well, there's one video where you'll see plenty.
Yeah, will we see full backle?
Full booty judge?
There is. I'm thinking one of the videos is me completely naked the entire time. One of the videos is, yes, me shirtless. One of the videos is me naked making out with somebody.
Ooh.
So it's like, there's definitely going to be some Tom Goss skin in some of these videos, but not all of them. It's always in a way which is tasteful or interesting or contributing to the story. Mm. Not gratuitous, but, you know.
Oh, come on. A little gratuitous never hurt anyone. What are you doing with is it Dennis Francese? Is that how you say his last name?
Daniel?
Daniel from Mean Girls. You worked on a project with him.
Actually, he's in a couple of the videos. So he's in my first video called Abu Fedora, and he plays my counterpart. We just shot a second video in Quebec called Quebec, and he'll be in one final video called Regretting. And so there's definitely a narrative arc with him. So it's been kind of really interesting. It was really great to work with him on La Bufadora. And that was really interesting and definitely spurred a friendship. And when I sent out a call for Quebec, he we had a good time. He was like, hey, man, you know, and it made sense because it's the same character. So It's been really, really nice getting to work with him more and really really building a friendship, both personally and artistically.
So Daniel Franzese, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah.
He played Damien in Mean Girls. I'm a little bit foggy about who he was in the movie.
I think he's his character is the gay best friend, more or less.
Oh.
I think it's the lead when he was male in high school. Yeah.
Yeah, because this movie came out in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and also being in that movie kind of, he says, forced him to stay in the closet because people just, you know, he wasn't ready to come out when he made the movie and everybody assumed he was gay. And so, I think he only came out like 4 or 5 years ago, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, he's doing wonderfully. Mm-hmm. He does a lot of stand up.
Yeah.
And acting.
And I think he's got a book coming out or something, or no, he's on tour. I don't know. I tried to get him on the podcast, but their publicist has not responded to my emails.
She's not liking it.
Oh, you want me to?
Yeah,
well, let me know. I'll link you guys up.
Yeah.
I would love to talk to
you. You're going
to
hit swipe right on Feast of Fun.
Howdy, I will we are always verified. Swipe right on Feast of Fun.
We're verified.
Are you?
Though it's not the size that matters. It's the motion of the ocean. Oh, speaking of which, a lifelong dream for me is to be in drag, play like a drag queen and like a major character in one of your music videos.
In one of my music videos?
Yes.
Well, you've known me for 10 years. How have you never said this to me?
Just because sometimes dreams are not vocalized does not mean that you don't exist. Mm-hmm.
That's true, but I would encourage you as my friend and as somebody that I love to vocalize your dreams to me, especially if I can help make them come true.
Yeah, I think it'd be a lot of fun. I'll play your best friend who pushes. I want to do something like, you know, where I'm eating like a slice of cake. Do you remember the music video? She's got legs.
She knows how to use them.
And basically, the plot of the video: ZZ Top are observing a Cinderella story of a girl, of beautiful woman who doesn't understand she's beautiful, and she's working at a gas station, and the manager of the gas station is this. You know, basically a drag queen who's yelling at her and telling her to go order a cake for her to eat.
Mm.
And she brings a cake to the gas station and then the ZZ Top pulls up in their magical car and transforms the Cinderella into a badass bombshell. And she comes into the gas station and takes the glasses of the lady who's eating the cake and shoves it in the cake and tells her to take this job and shove it. And puts her in the place. And so I want to be the woman who gets like either the badass bombshell or the woman who likes to eat cake and gets her glasses pushed into the cake.
Yeah, that sounds great. Okay, done.
Let's do it.
Like a tribute to, you know, ZZ Top.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, it sounds fun.
She's got legs. She knows how to use them. Tonight here, folks, she's in Chicago, you're going to see me perform at the Call with all the a lot of the girls from Camp Wanakiki and the Sugar Baker Twins celebrating Kevi Vida's birthday as a trans person, yes.
Oh, wait, it's 5-year anniversary of being a drag queen.
Yes.
Okay, that's correct. What it is. Yes, it's her drag-iversary.
April 1st, just like Feast of Fun, mm-hmm. is Roots is in Feast of Fools and April Fool's Day. We're going to be celebrating it tonight at the Call at 10 p.m. Bring some dollars, honey, and I'll make eye contact when you stick them in my bra. And for the record, there are no rules.
Ooh.
With me, with my body. You could do whatever you want. I'm even putting a bow on it and giving my body over to you as a present. You could do anything you want to with it.
Hope you save the gift receipt.
Why you?
Why you? Tom, it's always a pleasure. Are you going on tour soon? What's the tour schedule
like? Yeah, so I'll be on tour in the fall. I'm booking it right now. I don't know the exact schedule, but when this comes out late summer, my new record and all the stuff, then I'll go on tour as a result of that. But until then, I'm kind of staying put and just making a shit ton of content. I want everybody to be so proud of me.
Push it.
Proud of you. I like you just the way you are.
Me too.
Thank you.
You don't need to make amazing music or be a adorable buff bear chasing twink, or a you know, a wise caring person to make me love you, but I still love you because and despite and because of those things.
Well, I love you guys too. Yes, and I'm so happy you guys are in my life. Thank you for always being there all the time. It's really
always
wonderful.
And forever, and I guarantee you I will not show up drunk at one of your concerts and start fighting with people.
Thank you.
I promise.
Pete Buttigieg was robbed.
Goodbye, Tom. Get Devin and Ned our best. Bye.
I will.
Tom lives in Los Angeles, California. You can check out his new music video that thinks outside the box, Wake Alive, on his YouTube channel, Tom Goss Music.
You can also see him every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific on Facebook Live with Devin Green and Ned. And they sing songs. They do take your requests. So, you know, email him ahead of time. He'd be like, hey, play this for me, would you?
If you were gay, it'd be okay, because you see, you are too so dear to me. That's you know, that song's from I'm doing a medley of like amazing Broadway musical songs tonight.
I'm so excited to watch and perform and film and see it.
Yeah,
I do love your Broadway melody, but I also love it when you
medley
when you perform live and you sing live. So you're gonna sing a little number for people.
Prepare to be entertained and dazzled. I don't know if you can handle it.
They can handle it.
I don't think you can handle it. Ooh.
Bring your dollar bills, your $5 bills, your 20s, your 50s, your 100s.
Make it rain, honey. I like it when I get on the floor and stuff comes pouring over me. Preferably it's dollar bills, but, you know, I'll take anything, even loose change. Just warm me so I can put my safety goggles on.
Just have a little bucket.
Yeah.
Here, put it in here.
That would be a probably good idea. Just go around, hand people a bucket and be like,
put your money in the bucket. Take the bucket. Put the bucket. Take the money.
Just throw in your wallet, honey. Just give me your PayPal password and just say, treat yourself.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.